The following is a meeting with devotees with His Holiness Srila Satsarupa Das Goswami, recorded on July 13, 2002, in Wicklow, Ireland.
The topic of today's class is anxiety. And it's a Krishna conscious talk. But I'm going to draw from some psychological information also on this topic. It's sort of the talk of the town, this topic, in medical circles and even weekly magazines. About a month ago, I don't read Time magazine, but I saw the cover advertised, and it said that the cover was anxiety, understanding anxiety. It had a picture of a woman in just her head. She was in bed, and her blanket was covering her face, and it was obviously time for her to be sleeping, but her eye, you could only see one eye, was wide open, and she was full of worries. So anxiety is simply put as a threat to your well-being that comes in one way or another. I have one book I've just started to read, and I want to draw a few things from it. It's called Finding Serenity in the Age of Anxiety by Robert Gerson. And it's a theistic book, fortunately. And so he doesn't think you can be free of anxiety without without reaching God. He has a good definition of God in his word explanations at the end of the book. Throughout the book, I use the word God to represent the ultimate reality which remains inaccessible to the intellect, the unfathomable, inexpressible mystery that encompasses the universe and the higher power that we human beings are often able to connect with through prayer and meditation. It is not used in any specific religious context, and readers are encouraged to interpret it in terms of their own belief systems. So, for us, we take it as Krishna. Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, not the impersonal or some Viswarupa idea of God. In this book and in other books also, anxiety is divided into three kinds of anxiety. As I explain them a little, I'll explain them in terms of devotees' lives, although naturally you'll be thinking like that, applying it to yourselves, because we're persons. Vaikuntha is no anxiety, but we're not Vaikuntha yet. We're in the conditioned world, and we want to go to Vaikuntha. So we have so many anxieties that are preventing us from Krishna consciousness, and therefore I think it's relevant to talk about them. So they're numbered here as toxic, natural, and sacred. The most difficult one, the most destructive one, is toxic, but it's a little difficult also for me to explain. So I'm going to explain natural first, because it's such an obvious kind of anxiety. And then we'll get the hang of it easier. This is considered a good anxiety. And it comes when you're faced with some immediate threat. Just like I heard about the fire in Radhanath's house. Aniruddha was there. So, for some intuitive reason, Radhanath was about to leave his house, but he went upstairs again one more time to check, to get his wallet, was it?
Yes.
To get his wallet. And he opened the door, and the whole room was ablaze with a big fire and smoke. So naturally he was full of anxiety, and the adrenaline was pumping. So what do you do when you have, what kind of anxiety is this? You have to act, you have to do something. So they get the fire extinguishers and put out the fire. So the anxiety that you feel is good, because here's a danger that has to be immediately confronted. And if you didn't have anxiety, you couldn't survive. It's a survival strategy or mechanism that is given to us in nature with this body. In this book, they were giving a scenario with a Darwinian kind of story of a caveman living in a cave, and he heard a noise outside, so he got anxious that it would be some animal, and so in all anxiety, he looked outside and he saw it was a bear. But so then this you've heard this expression. Fight or flight came to mind. Either at times of anxiety, when you're confronted with a natural anxiety, an animal or some opponent or something, if it's too scary for you and you can't take it, then you run. Or if it's a challenge that you want to take on, then you fight. So you're struck with this and kind of anxiety. So he decided the bear was not so big. He decided to fight. So he picked up his spear, and with great concentration, he came forward and threw the spear and killed the bear and got himself a good stock of meat also. So just an ordinary things like... If your tire is a little soft, you better think, I think I better pump up my tires before I go on that trip. I better get my car serviced. These are natural anxieties, and it's good that you have them. If you didn't have them, they'd cause you more trouble in the end. So this is a kind of a bridge anxiety to the other one I'll be telling you about later. It comes from life. It comes from outside, and has to be dealt with right away. Let's see. There's a little chart I was going to read from for each one. A natural anxiety. The conflict is the self against the world, the man against the bear. So we're tiny creatures, and we're trying to survive, and we get anxiety when the world confronts us with something. So our anxiety is purposeful. That's the conflict. The message of this natural anxiety is responds to real dangers. Anxiety is in direct proportion to the degree of the danger. Just not like you don't get exaggerated or panicky about what it is. If there's a fire, you put out the fire and do the needful. Certainly trained people like firemen and military men and things like that, they know exactly what is the proportion of the danger, and they respond accordingly. That's their training. He also notices new opportunities in this kind of anxiety. Specific. The anxiety is specific. It's realistic. It's reasonable, and it's helpful. So we can't do without this kind of anxiety. You find yourself drinking too much alcohol, and all kinds of bad things are happening in your life and with your family and your body, or your diet isn't good, then you should get some anxiety and correct it, or go to the doctor if you've got a bad wound on your knee or something and get it corrected. So now toxic anxiety is, I'll read from the same little chart. This is like it comes first. This is the destructive one. The source is our own suppressed desires, feelings, thoughts, memories, suppressed natural and sacred anxiety. That's the source. The natural uncertainties of life. Wait a minute, I read wrong here. Toxic anxiety. Yeah, the conflict is self against self, instead of self against the bear or some thug. It's you're your own enemy. It's anxiety about anxiety. It's fear about fear. It's activated by false alarms. It overreacts to or is paralyzed by real alarms. It sees opportunities as dangers. Vague, unrealistic, unreasonable, ineffective, repetitive tape. You keep thinking over and over. Well, what if this may happen? What if that may happen? So all of this is a waste of energy. We have so much energy to use for, well, for natural. We have to be using our energies to survive in the world, and not just wasting it on worrying about things that are just our own mental hang-ups. What if this would happen? What if that would happen? In fact, they're characterized into different types of toxic is a good word, you know, poisonous characters. One is the worrier, the always worrying unnecessarily about things. And like one technique to use about it is to, if you're worrying, say, well, what are you worrying about? That if I go to Dublin in the car, there may be a car crash. So you can say, well, what are the chances of that? It's not likely to happen. I'll drive safely. There's good. The roads are good. My car is in good shape. I should stop worrying about this. But the person may worry and worry. About it, and worry about everything in life, instead of just letting things go and not anticipating trouble. And so, when you worry and worry like that, you also bring on physical diseases by anticipating them. Thoughts, it says, suppressing desires. So, and suppressing feelings. We all have feelings. We want to be loved, want to love. So when you get uptight, you don't express these feelings for different reasons. And this is toxic anxiety that, again, causes things to you mentally. You can get real sick. You can go crazy. You can become a criminal. You can become an addict. You know, abuse drugs, abuse something else, abuse people. This is what happens when you have toxic anxiety. It comes out in all these different ways. because it's within you, and it's you're like paralyzed. You're just eating your, you're eating yourself away without any release. So it's the self against the self. And repetitive tape ought to be changed. You know, take the tape off and change it to something else. Say, oh, you know, this bad thing is going to happen, this bad thing is going to happen, this bad thing is going to happen. We'll take it off and say, well, it doesn't have to happen. I can change it. I can make a better relationship with that person that I'm thinking badly of, or whatever it is. Change the tape. Don't keep thinking of the same thing over and over and over and over. That's an example of toxic. This is a junior presentation, my class. I don't know much about these things, but I thought to just let it fly and give you some of my talk. Anyway, but you can see how in Krishna consciousness, if we go now again to this order, 1, 2, that if you are in, if you're having toxic thoughts in Krishna consciousness, how it would prevent you from functioning nicely as a person or as a devotee. If you're always worrying about putting yourself down as a devotee, or being afraid to go to the temple to meet people, so many things that in the life of a devotee, which in so many ways parallels a normal person's life, you would be prevented from functioning nicely. That's a toxic anxiety. Worrying, I said, is one characteristic. So that one kind of toxic personality is the worrier. Another is the perfectionist. Everything has to be perfect, or he's hung up. Another is the critic, always criticizing himself. You didn't do this right, you didn't do that right. Maybe, sometimes they say, maybe you got that from childhood. Your parents were always just telling you, oh, you're stupid, you're good for nothing. And that repetitive tape keeps going on in your mind. Or somebody said it to you later in your life and it hurt you. So you have this critic in yourself. You're no good, you can't do anything. And you'd have to do something perfect. Or catastrophic, thinking that something really terrible is going to happen. There are some exotic ones. There's one called obsessive compulsive, where you just have a drive. Irrational. They're all irrational. they don't have a basis in fact. They're so exact. So compulsive is that you are always driven to do something which has no basis in reality. I remember a little one that I used to have. Maybe it was partly based on the danger of the neighborhood where I lived, in the Lower East Side, but I would lock my door with the key and I would walk down the hall, and then before I started going down the stairs, I'd say to myself, did I lock the door? And then I'd walk back again and then lock, and then say, you know, really keep my mind and say, now don't think you didn't lock it. This time you're really locking it. Then I lock it and I walk down the hall again and said, did you lock the door? And you go back again. So You're wasting all this time. You could have been down the street already and about your business. I read about one man. He had an obsessive desire that he had run over some small animal on the street. And he was a professional man. He had a job and everything, but he had this obsession. I don't know where he got it. These are all like crazy things, and they had to be worked out. A lot of this is cured by just calming yourself, by meditation, by prayer, by rational thinking, and sometimes by counseling. So he thought he ran over a little animal. So he felt very bad. He turned around the car and drove back down the street, and he saw there was no animal. And then he would drive down the street again and again have that feeling that I ran over a little animal. And just like me with the key, he would drive back and forth on the street doing this thing. And he finally got by some consultation and he got out of it, but that's a crazy kind of thing. But these can lead to things like reactions with people at the workplace or in the community of devotees that really can poison you, can poison your relationship with people. I knew a devotee who had what do you call them? Auditory hallucinations. She would think that somebody had just said something bad about her and would say, why did you say that? And the other devotee would just be shocked because she hadn't said that. So these are anxieties that come from yourself against yourself. So they're very harmful, and I've just indicated that you need help, and there are different ways to get help, and a lot of it is stressed that they're very easy ways that that you just can't lead a your life is too stressful and all these things are happening, so lead a less stressful life. There was a man. Another book I read. He wrote a big, very much acclaimed book about phobias and anxiety calming and everything. And then he himself developed a great anxiety. He was very humiliated that he wrote this book and he had it. So what he did, he simplified his life. He took all the stress out of his life. He moved to a small town. Did something with his phone so he wouldn't get phone calls, and for a period of his life he just kind of really took it easy and calmed himself from all the over input and over stress in his life. And by doing that and then coming back more slowly, he was able to get rid of some of these like monster things that were going on within himself, and just developing techniques of a good body care, exercise, rest, and so on. Well, these can help get out of toxic. And natural is something that should be there, and the better you develop it, the more interest, the better you are. And the most interesting and the most applicable for devotees is sacred anxiety. on a little chart, I'll read to you what it says. The conflict, like in each case, there's a conflict, there's a message, and there's a source, there's a conflict, and there's a message. The source is the deeper existential unknown. Who am I? Death, meaning and purpose of life, the afterlife, God. The conflict is self against life. The message is ultimate concerns about death and the meaning and purpose of life. So, actually, like, the more time you waste with toxic, how are you going to get to these real concerns? In other words, this is an anxiety. How am I developing my chanting and hearing? How am I getting rid of my detachments? How am I developing my love of Krishna? Who is Krishna? To develop these to the point of actually being anxious about your relationship with God is a very high point, rather than being complacent about your Krishna consciousness. And at the very beginning of this book, he has a few quotes gathered, and one of them I really like. It's very extreme by a very extreme religionist, the Christian philosopher Soren Kierkegaard. This is the description of sacred anxiety. He says, "This is an adventure that every human being must go through to learn to be anxious in order that he may not perish. Whoever has learned to be anxious in the right way has learned the ultimate. The more profoundly he is in anxiety, the greater is the man. Then anxiety enters into his soul and searches out everything and anxiously torments everything finite and petty out of him. And then it leads him where he wants to go. Thus, the individual, through anxiety, is educated into faith." So it's like you have to purify yourself of all these petty things, and to do that, it takes some anxiety. Like, you know, why do I still have this bad habit? You know, when am I going to give up breaking the rules? And when am I going to get serious about devotional service? So he's saying you have to really be anxious about this. And then they have a quote by Jesus, that one who seeks not stop seeking until one finds. When one finds, one will become anxious. When one is anxious, one will be awestruck and will enter the kingdom. That's a little bit like fear of God. You should be so anxious. It's like the contemplation of God brings an awesomeness or a fear, or and the search for him brings an anxiety. So we can't jump to the sacred anxiety, but it's so thrilling to even to think of it, that there is such an anxiety, that all anxiety isn't toxic, but that there's a yearning that saintly persons have, that please, Lord, please give me your mercy. Please bring me to your lotus feet. And when you do this, then you have no fear of this. You just let go. God will take care of everything. And so you don't have so much to worry about natural anxieties. And there's no question of toxic anxieties, because they're gone. You're just concentrating on serving Krishna, and you're not worrying about yourself in an irrational and in a neurotic way. But my point in presenting this, instead of just reading the Srimad Bhagavatam, is that it may be that we do have to do work in these ways to realize that we're persons who do have hang-ups, like being a worrier, being a perfectionist, or something like that. And we have to become self-aware. Self-aware isn't just to read in the Bhagavad Gita, I'm not this body, but it's to be self-aware that I'm an obsessive compulsive. I've got this mad desire to spend money, or, you know, I'm always worrying all the time, and this is hurting my Krishna consciousness, or I've got a great compulsion to, I'm always fault-finding people. And so these you could call psychological problems, and say, well, I don't have to worry about that. I'm Krishna conscious. But we do have to. Krishna consciousness in itself is the best therapy by chanting the holy name. But with it should go work, self-work, on these problems that we see in our ordinary conditioned lives. By working on our ordinary conditioned problems, then we'll come closer to the sacred anxiety. And Krishna's mercy will be the greatest aid to freeing us from the toxic. But we should show him that we want to do something about it too, by trying to rid ourselves of our material dysfunctional selves. So I'll stop here for some questions and comments. Got 15 minutes from my usual time. Chaitanya.
When we sometimes Prabhupada uses the word anxiety, he's mainly referring to, I think, the nature of anxiety in general, isn't it? That he will be talking about. Oh, somebody has so many buildings and so much possessions, and he has a family and extended family, and then he's worrying all the time. He cannot stop worrying about certain you know, aspect. How is it going? He's always in anxiety.
Yeah.
So that would be mostly in his lexicon. He would, when he's talking about anxiety, that would be the meaning he would be stating.
Yeah, he would be talking about the toxic anxiety.
No, natural mainly, isn't it?
From what you just described, if he's always worrying about all these unnecessary things he has, I own 50 companies and I have to be sure that they're all running properly. That's toxic anxiety, because why don't you sell all those buildings and just live a simple life? It's you who put yourself into this condition that you're always worrying. You don't have to live like that.
So excesses in material possessions is also could be a reason for toxic anxiety.
Yeah.
And the natural anxiety would be the natural anxiety of somebody who is just have simple livings, but
yeah,
at the same time he has to face the reality. And the reality.
It's usually, they say it's usually brief. It's usually some, we live in a dangerous world, there's usually some danger that comes to us, and we have to deal with it naturally, and just and then we go on with our life and learn something about it.
And a sacred anxiety, would it be like is it unnecessary in negative way, saying, is it only anxiety, oh, I have this problem and I cannot get to Krishna, or can it be a positive anxiety, say, like always thinking of Krishna?
No, it's positive.
Is it positive?
Yeah, it's all positive. Sacred anxiety is positive. Like the gopis, to an ordinary person, it looks like negative that Krishna's gone and they're crying and the cowherd boys are half conscious lying on the ground. This looks very negative. And it's very hard to understand unless you read it from the spiritual point of view, that they are actually experiencing a bliss of separation from Krishna. Mm-hmm. So it's a the Gaudiya Vaishnava philosophy really expresses that that sacred anxiety to perfection, but it can be there also in Christian philosophy. Some saintly person feeling the regrets of their past sins, the feeling a distance from God, but all of that, that urge to be rid of material life and come closer to God, is drawing Krishna's mercy to them. So it's not really bad.
The natural anxiety would be something like fear, you know, it would be more or less a regular fear by it.
Yeah, right.
Something we don't understand, spiritual anxiety. Mm. One sense it's like theoretical. For me, it's, you know, I can kind of understand Lord Chaitanya running towards the sand dunes and saying from Dhaban and so on. I can understand theoretically that that's a very high blissful state to be in. But nonetheless, from where I see it, it's anxiety. And even the toxic anxiety and natural anxiety, there's kind of, even the, like you mentioned, Ravana's, the fire. It was a natural anxiety, but you'd probably rather than having a natural anxiety as well, because, you know, although he needed it to deal with an emergency. What I'm trying to say, it seems like you run away from anxiety, whether it's not natural or toxic. And when you look at the spiritual anxiety, because it's theoretical, there's a running away from that as well. At least that's what, for me. I don't really want to be the situation where I'm thinking my brand should be better or, you know, my better devotee, you know, because I know that if you really are thinking like that, then you really have to
Well,
to react to it.
I was looking in the dictionary at the word anxiety, and it said that's the definition, but in usage, people use the word, and that really defines the word too. It said the word eagerness is fully accepted in standard for anxiety, such as I'm very eager to go swimming at the beach. So if you are feeling very eager about Krishna conscious practices and reading and chanting and being Krishna conscious and advancing, why should you want to avoid? That should make it less fearful for you to think, oh, I want to avoid that. It should, you should want to reach a state where you'll be more eager to be Krishna conscious, not think that it's so advanced I would have to give up everything, or I'd have to criticize myself for not being a good chanter in here. I don't want to put myself down and be guilty. That would be like almost another toxic anxiety, always feeling guilty that I'm not a good enough devotee. But I think sacred anxiety is not like that. It's not like thinking I'm a terrible devotee. God doesn't love me. None of the other devotees love me. I'll never get anywhere in spiritual life. It's not like that. It's where you reach the stage of you're above the others, and you're really getting closer to Krishna's mercy and yearning for it, and it's become a real thing in your life that you want and that you're eager to have, so much that the other things are diminishing. So I think if you reach it, it'll become more like a consuming thing that you want, like other things that people are eager for in this life. That may not be good for them. We were talking about, you know, abusive things like drugs or liquor. Well, the people they really want those things. But just to use it as an example, when you reach sacred anxiety and you really want Krishna, and it's not destructive, it's positive, But there's a real feeling now that I want to reach this, and I must have it. A lolium. I have a desire for it, a greed for it. And but at the same time, it's very deep, and yeah, these questions come first. Like, there's some uncertainty that well, what does happen after death? Will God accept me? Where will I go? Those who are atheists, when they face these life and death issues, they say, well, there'll be nothing. When the end of life comes, there'll be nothing. But the person who has actual sacred anxiety, he's seeking, his ultimate question is, at the time of death, I want union with God. I don't know exactly how, but I'll pray for it. I don't deserve it. And I haven't been a good person, but I just want to, I have an anxiety to please reach his lotus feet. So that's different from what you're saying, like putting yourself down for not being a good sadhaka or something. It should be something within your soul that somehow or other, despite my mistakes, I want to reach the ultimate union with God, and I'm feeling that. So for a person to be able to walk around in this world and start to feel that is good, and we should try to develop our lives toward that. It comes with thinking that I am going to die, and I don't really know what's going to happen after death by my own experience. But Prabhupada says, if we think of Krishna, we'll go to him. So these things concern me, and I want to spend time praying and meditating about them. So that's sacred anxiety. But can you see how it would be how it could be different than in an ordinary way, just putting yourself down because you can see, compared to other devotees, you're not very good, and you know you don't chant well, and such. That wouldn't be sacred anxiety. That would be more yourself against yourself. Just worrying, well, I'll never make it. There's no chance I'd ever go back to Godhead. Krishna wouldn't favor me. I'm just a bum. And so that's not sacred anxiety. You can still have sacred anxiety even though you're very, very fallen. Yes.
Just in that talk of sacred anxiety, I was remembering that verse by Rupa Goswami that describes Ashavanga, hope against hope. Can't remember the Sanskrit right now, but it's something along the lines that even though I don't possess qualities of a Vaishnava, I have no knowledge, I've taken birth in a lowly family, I have no qualifications at all, but still I hope against hope for Govinda's mercy.
Yeah.
So it's the sacred anxiety is a realistic assessment of our small position as parts and parcels, small servants of God, and just depending on him fully for his mercy, that's all we're made of and that's all we can aspire for. That drives us. That's actually enlivening because it's realistically assessing our situation and the kindness of the Lord toward us.
There was a nice journal entry by Dhanurdhara Swami. He was talking about death and the pain of death. I wish I had read it more carefully. But he was saying that a doctor was saying that the pain of death is not the greatest fear, because if it gets too painful, you pass into a coma anyway. But the greatest pain, and this is the part I can't quite remember, was something like the feeling of becoming nothingness and the pulling away, the detachment of your identity from everything, which everyone would experience. So he said, so a devotee, he can be free of that if at the last moment he's just thinking, I don't know my destiny, but I just surrender to you, Krishna, please take me. Then his fear of death, or his pain of death, won't be very great. So he won't have great pain. The one pain, no matter how great it would be, he would just pass out physically. And that other pain, which they say is the greater, he wouldn't have that. He just, in his simple way, you know, from what we've learned, we say, Krishna, I'm yours, please take me. Will you take me? Please remember me. And then he can leave this world. It requires faith. Tanya.
Anxiety or whatever, toxic, natural, sacred, is it like an infectious thing? In a sense, if somebody is in anxiety next to us, will it make us an anxiety?
Oh, yeah.
or if somebody has a sacred anxiety, yeah. That probably will also kind of...
Just like, say, the closest combination you think of, husband, a spouse. If the one is always getting on the other with the toxic anxiety, you know, then it's going to go back and forth. They'll be infected, you know. Oh, you never do this, you never do that, you don't do this right. And the other one, they'll start to feel like that too. All these things are infectious. And if they both have this good natural, they'll say, you know, did you pay the insurance? Is the car fixed? And let's be sure to take care of this and be sure that the children are all right. They would see opportunities to not be afraid of the world because they can deal in the world. A person who didn't know how to live in the world and had no life skills might be very fearful in front of natural anxieties. You think of the old woodsmen, you know, who lived in the woods. They had natural anxiety because there was so much danger there, but they were very adept at surviving. That's what it was. There must have been a lot of natural anxiety in the old days because everyone was trying to survive against all these elements. That was one of the explanations, that nowadays there are less occasions for natural anxieties. There are not so many roaming beasts and everything, but the people are using up that adrenaline and using up that drive for toxic anxiety. So it's just making them worse. There's not that many things to worry about on that level, but they're worrying, worrying, worrying. This may happen, that may happen, this may happen, that may happen. I have to be a perfectionist, or my boss. Maybe I should ask my boss for a raise. No, if I ask him for a raise, he'll...
Fire.
And they lose the opportunity. It would have been a good opportunity to go ahead and do it and ask him for the raise at that time. And then they don't do it, and then later they think of it again. I was reading... The person didn't take that opportunity to ask, and then they got depressed, and they started overeating, and then their work performance went down, and they lost all their courage, and then it kind of went on a loop. They saw, well, this isn't good, and they started working better, you know, losing weight, doing that, and the opportunity came again. Now my work is good. I think I should ask my boss again. But then, again, they didn't go, the courage. So that's when you fail to have natural good natural anxiety, which is a good thing, and you fail in the opportunities that it presents. You become stronger in the world when you take advantage of them. But Prabhupada's use, as you said, I think it's just generally people's fear. People are in anxiety, toxic anxiety. He may sometimes talk like Pranada did about having the anxiety, when will I meet the Lord? So this is just some technical language I put in today for the same things you'll find in his books. But I just think when I look at them that I know I have toxic anxiety. I'm very unhappy about that, that there's so much of that has to be removed. I don't have so much natural, I don't have so much ability to deal with natural anxieties. But when I think of this, it just seems like such a thrilling ideal, not just theoretical, like I could never reach it, but just, you can look at that, something very high, you could look at it as, oh, theoretical, I'll never reach it, or just like an ideal that, oh, it's wonderful that some have reached it, does exist. Like when I read that, when I read the Kierkegaard thing, it's just so thrilling. It's so radical. I couldn't imagine anybody reaching it. And people don't like him because he's like that. He says, you know, like people would say, you know, cool it, man. You know, just relax. Why are you so anxious about the fact that within you, you know, you have some things that aren't pure. Why are you striving so much, and why are you so worried about your lack of sacred consciousness? But when I read it, it's just so thrilling to hear that that a human being is himself anxious. And is advocating that we should be, and that this is the way to enter our relationship with God. You know, who will take this on? No one can really take this on, but he did, and it's an ideal. Let me just read it to you again. This is an adventure that every human being must go through to learn, and notice it says to learn to go through. You can't avoid it. This is an adventure that every human being must go through. You can't avoid anxieties. To learn to be anxious in order that he may not perish. Whoever has learned to be anxious in the right way, as is in this chart, there are right ways and wrong ways, has learned the ultimate. The more profoundly he is in anxiety, in the right way, the greater is the man. Then anxiety enters into his soul, which would be God, and searches out everything and anxiously torments everything finite and petty out of him. So Krishna like possesses him and says, I want you, and I want all these sinful things out of you. I want you to be purified. And then it leads him where he wants to go. Thus the individual, through anxiety, or you could say through purification, is educated into faith. So anxiety is also like purification. and Jesus, let one who seeks not stop seeking until one finds. When one finds, one will become anxious. When one is anxious, one will be awestruck and will enter the kingdom. Like awestruck. Oh God! Oh my God! You know, God is so glorious, so beautiful, so magnanimous. I have striven, and now by His mercy, I've met Him face to face. We see that like Dhruva Maharaj and others, they just fall at Krishna's feet. They can't even speak. That they're so awestruck. They're in anxiety that I've actually now had the darshan of God. So he said she should progress until he has found this. And then he will enter the kingdom. So let's not brush these things off as impossible. But let's worship them as ideal, and in our little baby step by baby step way, try to make progress rather than go backwards. Krishna consciousness is idealism. Yes.
I was just thinking, anxiety can be seen as a catalyst. Because you bring about change, and it's the way you make the change. And it's always going to bring positive change, and especially sacred anxiety, because it's not, it's just going to be a catalyst to make yourself better.
Yeah.
Whereas toxic anxiety gets just worse when you start identifying the body.
Yeah.
Seeing this body and this material world as the all in all.
Yeah.
You increase your toxic anxiety. But when you see Krishna as the sanctioner, that if you sanction something, then it will happen, then you become more relaxed, because if it's Krishna's will, it will happen. It doesn't just say you have to relax a bit, but you make your moves, but you always leave in the hands of Krishna.
Yeah.
It's His will at the end of it. He sanctions everything we do.
Yeah. So. That's good, the word catalyst. There's a little motto, let go, let God. You let go trying to control, let God do it. And by His mercy, things will be done. Not by your manipulations and worrying. Okay.